WLRN Edition 95, broadcasting in 3, 2, 1.
I was born woman, off my knees I will stand, for my liberation, sisters rise again. I was born woman, off my knees I will stand, for my liberation, rise and rise again.
Greetings and welcome to the 95th edition podcast of Women's Liberation Radio News for this Thursday, March 7th, 2024. This is Aurora Linnea, biological feminist and reality enthusiast. This month's edition takes on the future of fertility. Before we begin, let me warn you that our interview segment is going to be a bit different this month. We had the tremendous good luck to snag Sylvia Guarini, author of the recent book From the Neutral Body to the Post-Human Cyborg, for an eye-opening hard look into fertility interventions, artificial reproduction, transhumanism, and big tech. However, because Italian is Sylvia's mother tongue, we worked around the language barrier by opting for a written interview in translation. What this means is that during the segment, rather than hearing Sylvia herself, you'll hear me reading out Sylvia's answers to our questions. Later in the show, we'll also hear commentary on the topic from WLRN's own Sekhmet She-Owl. The team at WLRN produces a monthly radio broadcast to break the sound barrier that women are blocked by under the status quo rule of men. This blocking of women's discourse we see in all sectors of society, be they conservative, liberal, mainstream, progressive, or radical. The thread that runs through all of American politics, except for separatist feminism, is male dominance and entitlement in all spheres. To start off today's edition, here's Mary O'Neill with women's news from around the globe for this Thursday, March 7th, 2024.
Thanks, Aurora. A six-year-old Palestinian girl and the two rescuers who were sent to look for her were all found dead over a week after the search began. Keen Rajab was traveling with six relatives when they came under Israeli fire on January 29th. For several hours, rescuers tried to comfort Rajab on the phone as she explained that her relatives were all dead. Contact was lost with the rescue team shortly after they arrived at the scene. Gazan authorities estimate that more than 12,000 children have been killed since the fighting began in October, and over 600,000 have been displaced from their homes. According to the CDC, between 2014 and 2022, premature births have risen by 12% in the United States. These births are defined as taking place before 37 weeks of gestation. Dr. Vanessa Torbenson, gynecologist at the Mayo Clinic in Minnesota, believes an increase in maternal age, which carries a higher risk of health complications, may be one of the reasons for such a rise. In the UK, an NHS trust has claimed that breast milk produced by trans-identified men is just as good as breast milk produced by women. This claim was repeated by the BBC, among other broadcasters and newspapers. Fascinatingly, the trust referenced five studies, four of which did not actually include trans-identified men at all, but instead involved induced lactation in women. The fifth study, which only included one trans-identified man as a research subject, demonstrated that trans-identified men did not produce nearly enough breast milk necessary for a baby's daily intake. J.K. Rowling once again made headlines after donating £70,000 to the women's group For Women Scotland, which is challenging the Scottish government's position that men can be viewed and recognized as women if they have received a gender recognition certificate. In her message to For Women Scotland, Rowling wrote, "You know how proud I am to know you. Thank you for all your hard work and perseverance. This is truly a historic case." Jonathan C. Richardson, a trans-identified man who now goes by the name of Autumn and is serving a 55-year sentence in Indiana for strangling his stepdaughter, is seeking $150,000 in damages after being told by the prison chaplain that he can't wear the hijab outside of his cell. He claims, "I wear the hijab in order to cover my head and ears for modesty purposes, as I am an Islamic practicing trans woman." He's also joined by the ACLU in another lawsuit against the Indiana Department of Corrections for discrimination on the basis of his gender identity. A man who identifies as gender fluid has won the mountain race in Spain's women's category. Duran Pradas, a 48-year-old man, would have come in 55th place had he run in the men's category. The Council of Europe's Human Rights Commissioner published a comment this month advocating for the full decriminalization of prostitution, which is referred to as sex work and defined as the consensual exchange of sexual services for payment among adults. It goes on to say that consensual adult sex work should not be conflated with violence against women or trafficking in human beings. It neglected to reference any objective long-term studies of the Nordic model. Michelle O'Neill, the vice president of Sinn Féin, was named Northern Ireland's first minister. This marks the first time that a nationalist has held the position since the Good Friday Agreement of 1998 established the Northern Ireland Executive, which is jointly led by a first minister and deputy first minister.
Hey, sisters, Jenna here with a couple for you. In late February, the journal Science published a study addressing high school textbooks and how they approach the subject of sex, specifically whether or not essentialism is inadvertently being taught alongside biology. In short, the study found that yes, it is. In six different textbooks included in the study, published between 2009 and 2016, all generally conflate sex and gender. Additionally, the textbooks don't address the degree of variation within a sex. Rather, they generally teach uniformity within a sex, an idea that also contributes to essentialist belief. When they do acknowledge differences within sex, the textbooks point to gene variation in sex chromosomes rather than, say, environmental factors that shape people. This approach is obviously problematic in that essentialism being entwined with biology reinforces gender stereotyping, the dehumanization of women, and support for gender discriminatory practices. In an open letter to both the Israeli government and U.S. officials, a group of U.S.-based anti-Zionist Jewish feminists have spoken out against what they describe as, quote, the opportunistic manipulation of the issue of sexual assault by those committing war crimes themselves. They refer to Israel's denouncement of Hamas for the specific issue of rape as, quote, selective outrage, which at other times has been, quote, conspicuously absent, such as when members of those very governments or militias are accused of sexual abuses within their own ranks, end quote. Quote, sexual assault is pervasive, even commonplace. It is rarely met with the outrage that its incidence, impact, and enormity merit. And history is also replete with examples of rape charges being wielded by stakeholders in armed conflict to render the enemy more monstrous and thus as deserving of ever more depraved forms of militarized violence, end quote. The letter also addresses the Israeli government's attempt to use this issue as a wedge to discredit anti-Zionist feminists. Quote, especially feminists of color, Arab feminists, and Jewish anti-Zionist feminists, and others critical of its lethal offensive against Palestinians, end quote, calling it, quote, a cynical attempt to incite public fury and deflect attention from the genocide it is perpetuating, end quote. The list of signers continues to grow. If you'd like to add your name, a link will be included in today's podcast description.
Latin America's first professional women's softball league began operating at the end of January in Mexico. Six teams have been established, with 120 women participating as professional softball players, who hail from Mexico, Cuba, Venezuela, Colombia, and the United States. The league is more than 2 years in the making, contending with financial concerns and questions of how to protect the players from sexual harassment. The league's general manager, Andrea Valdez, said, people always talk about professional sports for men, but this is a big opportunity for women to be on display. I love working in sports, and I love that my first responsibility of this kind is with women. Lois de la Fuente, who plays catcher for one of the teams, said she never thought this moment would come. That concludes WLRN's World News segment for Thursday, March 7th, 2024. I'm Mary. Share your news stories, announcements, and tips with us by emailing info@wlrnmedia.com and letting us know what's going on.
Temple, you are. That was Alanis Morissette with her song, Heart of the House. Next up, we'll hear excerpts of an interview Aurora did with Silvia Guarini about fertility technologies and artificial reproduction. Silvia Guarini is a radical ecologist and longtime campaigner against genetic engineering and NATO technology. Recently, she co-founded the International Feminist Network Against All Artificial Reproduction, Gender Ideology, and Transhumanism. Her terrific book, From the Neutral Body to the Post-Human Cyborg, A Critique of Gender Ideology, was released in October by SpinFX Press. You can find Aurora's review of this monumental work, called From Bad to Worse to the End of the World, on our website, WLRNmedia.com. But for now, take a listen to Aurora reading Ms. Guarini's answers to pertinent questions about the future of fertility.
Jenna again here. To differentiate between the questions and the answers in our interview with Silvia Guarini, I will be reading the questions and, as Aurora stated in the greeting, she will be reading Silvia's answers. Enjoy. How did you first become critical of reproductive technologies?
My reflection and critical analysis starts from an ecological feeling for the unavailability of bodies and the living, from opposition to genetically modified organisms and the artificialization of nature. I could not help but arrive at opposition to the artificial reproduction of the human. After years of campaigning against biotechnology and nanotechnology and mobilizing against the entry of GMOs into Europe, I organized a protest outside the Wish for a Baby fair. The procreation engineers gathered at Wish for a Baby in the name of fulfilling the desire for parenthood at any cost, have long been pushing to normalize the artificial reproduction of humans as a normal way of coming into the world. It is the same transhumanist paradigm that, with the development of technosciences, from the fields and animal breeding, has reached the human. Let us think of eugenics not as a deadly drift, but as the engine and direction of genetic research, always present even from the origin of artificial reproduction technologies, first in their zootechnical development, and then in the transition to the human. Richard Edward, creator of the birth of Louise Brown, the first test tube baby, stated as early as the 1980s that when it was technically possible to genetically modify the human species, it would become legitimate to do so. I then went back to the ideology behind the development of technosciences, transhumanism. Haldane, a pillar of eugenics and transhumanism, coined the term ectogenesis in the 1920s to refer to the development of a human being outside of the maternal body, seeing it as an important opportunity for social engineering. Medically assisted procreation, or MAP, represents the Trojan horse of transhumanism because by opening the way to the possibility of artificial reproduction, the consequence is the continuous optimization, implementation, and artificialization of the entire procreative process. The embryo becomes a product, and what is a product can be subjected to any experimentation, selection, and modification. Moreover, with the concepts of mother of intention, parents of intention, parental project, parent one, and parent two, the human being ceases to have a history, a provenance, being reduced to the eugenic assembly of ovum and sperm for a narcissistic and selfish desire for a child at all costs of a consumer who in some countries can already program it by choosing certain characteristics. The process of filiation disappears, and its place is taken by the process of artificial reproduction involving the purchase and selection of sperm and eggs and the production of embryos. The procreation process is fragmented, redefined, and becomes a place of biomarketing and redesigning, where every limit can and must be broken and eliminated.
What new developments in so-called fertility medicine most concern you today? What are the major risks of these technologies moving forward?
I am concerned about all the so-called fertility medicine and the risks inherent in all of these technologies. They are not simply risks, they are harmful consequences inherent in all these technologies. As far as health consequences are concerned, children born of all assisted fertilization techniques are at a statistically significant higher risk of numerous diseases, including oncological diseases, than those born of natural conception. As regards new developments, for instance, the new technique of mitochondrial DNA replacement opens up the possibility of a child that will be a genetic bricolage with the maternal nuclear DNA, the mitochondrial DNA of the woman who donated the oocyte, and the paternal DNA. The ROPA technique, receipt of partner's oocytes, for female couples, involves transferring the fertilized oocyte of one into the womb of the other, who will carry on the gestation. We have a so-called genetic mother and a so-called gestating mother. Thus continues the process of fragmentation of procreation and the erasure of the mother, the one from whom we come into the world. There has been strong international funding and push for the development of the artificial womb, and important steps have been taken in this direction, such as the experiments conducted by Israeli researchers at the Weizmann Institute of Science, in which mouse embryos have been grown outside the womb for longer than ever before. In 2017, leading bioethical bodies such as the UK's Nuffield Council of Bioethics, Germany's Deutscher Ethikrat, and the US National Academies spoke out in favor of human germline editing and for a global regulatory system. In 2018, the British Bioethics Committee Nuffield Council was clear in stating that the potential use of heritable genome interventions to influence the characteristics of future generations may be ethically acceptable. Also in 2018, the birth of the two girls genetically modified with CRISPR-Cas9 technology by a Chinese research group with the participation of some international researchers. The international scientific community has simply highlighted issues such as the lack of transparency and the risk-benefit ratio for the babies to be born. In a nutshell, the way to human genetic modification is open. Only safety requirements, guidelines, and social consensus are needed. But it is important to understand that it is from intrauterine insemination that the inevitable end point is the total artificialization of the procreative process and the genetic modification of the human being. Thus, we can understand that the consequences are on the whole of society and humanity. At stake is how one will come into the world, whether still as mother and father or redesigned in the laboratory.
How do you see the advancement of artificial reproduction as tied to patriarchal ideas and imperatives? More specifically, how does artificial reproduction relate to gender ideology?
Rather than a patriarchal imperative, I see a transhumanist imperative. The world of research, philanthropic foundations, finance, the entire biotechnological and pharmaceutical industry are attempting to reshape society by artificializing procreation and erasing the sexual difference between female and male. The aim is a new anthropological model, a neutral individual, infinitely moldable, uprooted, isolated, without memory, values, family, and community ties. The dimension of procreation, our sexed roots, humanity, and reality itself are the final frontier of transhumanism. Today, it is the very existence of reality and truth that is under attack, besieged by synthetic and artificial constructions that, without the need to impose themselves, become the only possible and imaginable horizon of meaning. A reality transformed into a process that can be remodeled at will. The very reality of sexed bodies is denied, and subjective sensations take the place of objective realities. The dissociation with the sexualized body opens up the dissociation and erasure of truth and the erasure of bodies. Truth, from an ontological question, thus becomes mere subjective feeling, infinitely decomposable and recomposable by the redesigners of synthetic humanity. The manipulators of reality act on all dimensions, from how one must be born in artificial reproduction clinics to how one must live in preventative bio-nano-medicalization with gene therapies, even if healthy, and with constant real-time algorithmic accompaniment and constant emergencies, to how and when one must die with the state-provided, quote, sweet death. The family of origin must be considered inadequate and unsuitable to take care of the children. The biological bond must no longer have any importance, and even the last tie that binds children with their parents must be broken, destroying these unique bonds that cannot be seeded and cannot be commodified. Children will be placed in the hands of technicians and courts that will decide according to what will be considered their best interests, rhetoric that will also serve to push forcefully towards the sexualization of children, pedophilia, and the gender ideology that penetrates schools with force, where children are taught that biological birth sex does not exist and that they can be whatever they want. A profoundly transhumanist principle. Gender ideology, gender identity clinics, and the trans industry sell synthetic illusions, opening up the disassembly of bodies towards a neutral human being made sterile, ready for artificial reproduction and genetic engineering laboratories. Gender ideology, gender identity clinics, and the trans industry sell synthetic illusions, opening up the disassembly of bodies towards a neutral human being made sterile, ready for artificial reproduction and genetic engineering laboratories.
Why are people so easily convinced to embrace artificial reproduction as progressive and even liberatory?
In the case of artificial reproduction, as with all technoscientific developments in the most controversial areas affecting our bodies, health problems, specifically those concerning possible genetic disorders of the unborn child or infertility, are used to create social acceptance. Assisted fertilization techniques are considered a therapy, but in reality they do not cure infertility and were never developed for this purpose, but rather to design human beings with certain characteristics. And paradoxically, they increase infertility because they spread the illusion that pregnancy can be postponed indefinitely. A real prevention of the vast majority of diseases and increasing infertility should be to combat the environmental factors that cause them, such as pesticides, plastics, electromagnetic waves, mRNA gene serums, and to remove the economic hardship that causes women to postpone motherhood beyond the childbearing age. Pre-implantation diagnosis is presented as necessary to prevent the onset of genetic diseases, but it is actually opening the door to eugenics practiced on a large scale. From its prohibition, we have moved on to its use for very serious, then probable onset genetic diseases, until it has been sanctioned for cross-eyed vision. I would like to remind you that IPR is strongly recommended if the woman is of advanced age, and recommended from the moment that the same in vitro fertilization techniques can damage the embryo. From genetic selection to the laboratory-designed child, what will be the boundary between what will be considered a cure, a prevention, an enhancement? We must always remember that whatever technology makes possible will be accepted, extended, and universalized. That is also why it is not possible to think of regulating assisted fertilization techniques. They must be abolished, all of them, without exception. From couples with infertility problems to fertile couples with problems of transmissible genetic diseases to single women and women couples, step-by-step medically assisted procreation is being extended to everyone, using the rhetoric of non-discrimination and allowing everyone to have access to it. For our part, we are clear. Medically assisted procreation for no one. There is no right to a child for anyone. Considering artificial reproduction as freedom and emancipation goes back to the thinking of Shulamith Firestone, who in the 1970s saw the artificial womb as a possibility to free women from the so-called, quote, biological tyranny and the so-called, quote, barbarism of pregnancy. This over time has generated a disembodiment with one's own sexed body and a split between women and the dimension of procreation, which belongs to women regardless of whether or not they give birth to a child, a dimension that has been expropriated by the medical and techno-scientific system and the fertility market in order to medicalize, pathologize, fragment, and artificialize it. Considering artificial reproduction as freedom and emancipation also connects us to a progressive and deeply transhumanist conception that hates the body, nature, and life. An idea of redesigning the world that makes bodies all available and modifiable. Donna Haraway, in her book Staying with the Trouble, Making Kin in the Cthulhu Scene, in the chapter The Children of the Compost, describes an imaginary world ruled by scientists in which all boys and girls will have three parents, be born through artificial reproduction, be genetically modified with genes from other species, be born without sex, and in the course of their lives, can further modify their bodies. This, which well represents a queer and cyborg, quote, transfeminism, is not only functional to the advance of the technoscientific and transhumanist system, but fits perfectly within it.
How can feminists resist and push back against reproductive technologies? Why is it crucial that we do so?
In several countries, there is strong feminist criticism of surrogate motherhood and important opposition campaigns at the international level, as in ICASM, International Coalition for the Abolition of Surrogate Motherhood, or Stop Surrogacy Now. But there is currently a lack of criticism of medically assisted procreation. This is either not considered at all, or criticism can be found in parts and limited to certain aspects, but basically, a position is maintained in favor of the technique of intrauterine insemination, or a position in favor of all techniques limited to certain conditions and in favor of allowing cryopreservation of gametes only for women and men who have to undergo treatments such as chemotherapy. I am deeply convinced that any partial criticism of artificial reproduction of the human will serve to create the context in which artificial reproduction will become the normal way of coming into the world. In the 1980s, the radical feminists of the FINRAGE network, Feminist International Network of Resistance to Reproductive and Genetic Engineering, and the Rote Zora had a profound understanding of what the development of artificial reproduction techniques would bring. Gina Correa likened it to the equivalent in biology of the Manhattan Project. In those same years, Allul and Charbonneau were writing about the manufacture of man by man, scientific eugenics, the man machine. Unfortunately, there is no memory of this. We and a few others have been writing about these processes for more than 20 years, but despite the warning we have been sounding for some time, we did not imagine that we would reach this point. Today, these developments are running fast. At the end of this year, they will start testing the artificial womb on babies born prematurely. It is crucial to oppose every artificial reproduction technique without exception, because a profound ontological and anthropological transformation of the human being is at stake. It is precisely the exceptions that have brought us to where we are today. The various legislative restrictions in time can only fall away. When the logic of artificial reproduction of the human is accepted, no regulation or ethics committee will be able to stem it this direction. It is important to create alliances to resist the transhuman advance. A, quote, culture of erasure that is demolishing and rewriting previous forms of existence. Procreation, birth, biological sex, education, relationships, family, death. We are on the last lap.
Like rain, these Canadian plains and their windblown hair. Oh, Jane, the bruised colored clouds, the smell of the ground in the ripening air. I have seen you in your flaring dress and your dry face of steel. As you're dragging your red rowing boat across the forever field. Like lightning washing everything clear. And these dimmers of doubt flicker, fade out and disappear. But Jane, that is our luxury. There are those of little faith, it seems, and they beg for truth like charity. Found love wriggling up from the mud on the shores of Grundy.
That was Sean Colvin with her song, Kill the Messenger.
From across the Femisphere.
To women worldwide.
Worldwide.
To women worldwide.
Radical feminist media.
To break the sound barrier.
Break the sound barrier.
Break the sound barrier.
Break the sound barrier.
Radical feminist media.
To break the sound barrier.
This is your grassroots.
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 Grassroots community radio station.
This is your radio station.
Women's Liberation Radio News.
For most of human history, women and girls have been reduced to the two bodily functions of ours that males seek to exploit, our sexuality and our reproductive capacity. The patriarchal attitude is, if you as a woman aren't sexually satisfying men, you're worthless. If you as a woman aren't having babies and raising them, you are worthless. To men, women have no other purpose beyond these two biological functions. Female existence is pointless outside of the value we can provide to males at that sexual and biological level. And that's the word we need to discuss when considering women's fertility. Value. Women and girls have always been told, verbally and otherwise, that our fertility, like our sexuality, determines our value. As women and as human beings, mothers are more valuable than child-free women. Fertile young women are more valuable than older postmenopausal women or infertile women. Men on the internet routinely explain their tastes in the female body as having to do with unconscious evaluations of female fertility. Motherhood is treated as the defining quality, rite of passage, and success marker of womanhood. Women who struggle with fertility, who are infertile, who undergo hysterectomy for medical reasons, etc., often express emotional distress at feeling like less of a woman because of these circumstances, similarly to women who have mastectomies during breast cancer treatment. All of this is rooted in the belief that a woman's value is largely determined by her fertility, which is a purely heteropatriarchal idea. Notice that male fertility is never part of the conversation and never determines male worth one way or the other. Historically, infertility was treated as a female-exclusive problem. If a heterosexual couple failed to conceive, everybody blames the woman, just as they blamed her if she failed to produce a son in their ignorance that it is the father's sperm that decides the sex of a baby. Men seem to have been presumed universally fertile for most of world history, and regardless, there has never been any kind of rhetoric about men's value or their masculinity being determined by their fertility, or even their actual parental status. Any conversation about present-day fertility technology and the length some women will go to have biological children would be incomplete without the acknowledgement of this fundamental attitude about women's value depending on reproduction and motherhood. It's a complicated conversation to have because on the one hand, glorifying biological motherhood and reproduction as a way to convince and coerce women into having babies is one of the oldest plays in patriarchy's book. On the other hand, most women become mothers, whether they do so enthusiastically and deliberately or not. We can't, as feminists, dismiss any aspect of female reproduction as politically unimportant or irrelevant, or overlook female fertility and motherhood as feminist issues. When considering the issue of transhumanism and the possibilities of artificial human reproduction, again, we're faced with contradictory and competing points. Men want and expect women to have babies for male benefit, which means rejecting motherhood is on some level an act of feminist resistance for women. At the same time, men developing technology designed to remove women from human reproduction and replace us with machines and laboratories is an act of profound dehumanization. Not of women, but of all people. Feminists have been talking about the misogyny of the surrogacy industry for a while now, along with that of the egg donation industry, both of them the result of capitalism commodifying the female body at the reproductive level. While these industries are different heads of patriarchy's female fertility hydra than those of transhumanism, they still arguably helped pave the road we're now creeping down, toward a world where human reproduction is transformed into an artificial, profit-driven, high-tech industry controlled by wealthy straight men. Surrogacy and human egg selling have already started to get people comfortable with turning reproduction into a business and the female body into a product. These industries have already normalized to some degree the separation of biological motherhood from the mother-child relationship. It should not come as a shock or a horror when, at some not-so-distant point in the future, we're faced with the normalization and expansion of lab-grown and robot-gestated babies, to say nothing of the transgender fetish fantasy of men carrying babies in implanted wombs. Transhumanists, most of them straight men, argue that freeing women from the burdens of pregnancy and birth through technology is progress. They say women are the ones who stand to benefit the most from this severing of the female body from human reproduction. These feeble arguments attempt to distract from the transhumanist male agenda of taking complete control of human reproduction, capitalizing on it, and turning it into a lucrative industry from end to end. The buying and selling of embryos and babies themselves, who have no connection to their biological parents because they're the product of purchased eggs and sperm and in the custody of the business owners whose labs they were created in, would make a handful of heterosexual men very, very rich. And without legal regulation of the industry, which would likely lag behind the development of the industry, imagine the buyers who would line up to purchase these kids. Pedophiles, pornographers, pimps, slave owners in need of a workforce, abusers of every kind. The non-abusive, wealthy celebrities and entrepreneurs of the world who want to skip the trouble of pregnancy are the least problematic buyer segment in the artificial child industry, but there's no telling whether they would in fact represent the majority of child buyers versus the minority. Transhumanist men, most of whom are also big supporters of transgenderism, like Martine Rothblatt, a well-known and wealthy man who identifies as a woman, don't care about the quality of life these hypothetical, artificially manufactured children would have. Even in a best-case scenario, where non-abusive individuals buy babies born through artificial reproduction and genuinely try to be good parents, The psychological profile of these children would not be healthy and high-functioning. Psychologists already acknowledge the long-term effects of the mother-child relationship during pregnancy on the child, and the concept of developmental trauma during pregnancy and within the first 6 to 12 months of life having a lasting psychosocial emotional impact. The idea that a baby would suffer no psychological, social, and emotional consequences from being grown and birthed in an artificial womb is so ridiculous, not to mention provably false, that the men who suggest the idea should be embarrassed of their own ignorance and stupidity. But again, they don't care. The well-being of the children and of the human species at large means nothing to them. All they care about is profit and power. The bottom line is, women should be the ones to control human reproduction. Since the dawn of patriarchy, we have never had complete control over it on a global scale because we've never had complete control over our own bodies. We've had partial access to effective contraception, safe abortion, and elective sterilization for less than 100 years, and a majority of women on Earth still don't have that access today. Women's history is the history of women and girls giving birth to babies they didn't want as a result of rape, forced marriage, and a lack of contraception, because straight men wanted the sex, and sometimes the children. That's why it's a powerful and radical act for any woman to say, "No, I will not reproduce. I don't consent to having children, and I don't care what men think about that." But women choosing not to have babies should not be an invitation to straight men to replace women's bodies with artificial wombs and turn human reproduction into a business. That is not a solution to any problem women face, and will only create new, insidious issues in society and for women and girls particularly. Put another way, we as women should not tie our individual or collective value and female identity to our fertility and reproductive power. But we should also not stand by and allow men to pervert human reproduction and human life with technology to the point that future generations of people begin life without the physical, psychological, and emotional connection to their biological mothers that equip them with the regulated nervous system they need to become healthy adults. And if there is even a 5% chance of men artificially creating baby girls for other men to rape, traffic, film in porn, and enslave, feminists need to be on the front lines of the resistance to that future.
Thank you so very much for listening to WLRN's 95th edition podcast on the future of fertility. WLRN would like to thank our guest this month, Sylvia Guarini, for taking the time out to share her views on fertility technologies and artificial reproduction. Thank you so much, Sylvia, for agreeing to an interview in spite of the language gap. Until next month, this is Aurora signing off on another WLRN podcast.
If you like what you are hearing and would like to donate to the cause of Feminist Community Radio, please visit our WordPress site and click on the donate button. Check out our merch tab to get a nice gift in exchange for your donation. And if you are interested in joining our team, we are always looking for new volunteers to conduct interviews, write blog posts, post to our Facebook and other social media pages, and do other tasks to keep us moving forward as a collective of media activist women. Thanks for listening. This is Jocelyn signing off for now.
And I am Jenna. Thanks for tuning in. Next month, we will focus our program on Mother Earth and the environment. We're going to do things a little bit differently and offer in-house 5-minute commentaries about the particular impacts environmental destruction and climate change are having on our emotional lives and health as women. Our handcrafted podcasts always come out the first Thursday of the month, so look for it on Thursday, April 4th. If you'd like to receive our newsletter that notifies you when each podcast, music show, and interviews are released, please sign up for our newsletter on the WLRN WordPress site. Stay strong in the struggle, and thanks for listening.
This is Mary, signing off on another edition of WLRN's monthly handcrafted podcast. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Spinster, Overit, and SoundCloud, in addition to our WordPress site. Thanks for listening.
And this is Emily. Our podcasts are always crafted with tender, loving care and in solidarity with women worldwide. Thanks for your support. We would love to hear from you, so please share, like, and comment widely.
But how will we find our way out of this? What is the antidote for the patriarchal kiss? How will we find what needs to be shown? And then after that, where is home? Tell me, where is my home? 'Cause gender hurts.